Good evening. From our News Front studio at WNDT in New York, Friday, December 13, 1968, and this is News Front on the Eastern Educational Network. I'm Mitchell Krause, and tonight, the black reaction to a white cabinet, with National Corps Director Roy Innes, Attorney Florence Kennedy, and NAACP Assistant Executive Director John Morsell. But first, for a summary of the late news, here's Milt Haynes.
Good evening. Three of Mr. Nixon's cabinet appointees held press conferences today. The Defense Secretary-designate, Representative Laird, talked in very general terms with reporters, saying he hopes by the time we get to the preparation of the first budget, we can end the war in Vietnam. That would be sometime late in 1969. Herbert Klein, Nixon's director of communications, said at the outset of Laird's press conference that Laird would not be able to discuss programs and specific changes in the Defense Department. David Kennedy, who will be Secretary of the Treasury, had a news conference in Chicago. He said that peace in Vietnam will not solve the economic problems of the country. Asked if peace could result in more funds for urban problems, Kennedy said, "I don't feel that a major dollar commitment is what the ghettos need. The ghettos need education, training, a program designed to bring up their hopes and aspirations." George P. Shultz, who will be the Secretary of Labor, met with Willard Wirtz. He said that the federal job training programs under the Democrats had provided a period of fruitful experimentations, and he said the Republican administration hopes to build on it. Both the president and the president-elect were involved in foreign affairs. Mr. Nixon took notes while William Scranton made a full report on his fact-finding tour of the Middle East. Scranton repeated for Nixon what he's been saying publicly, that while the United States has a deep interest in Israel, that improvement could be made in our relations with Arab states. Scranton said he feels the Arab world could live with a non-expansive Israel. "I don't think the Arab world is totally committed to the eradication of the state of Israel." Nixon had another visitor, the Democratic Senator Henry M. Jackson, who came by to urge the president-elect to protect the American nuclear deterrent. Senator Jackson said he urged an increase over the 41 Polaris subs and the 1,054 intercontinental ballistic missiles in the American arsenal. Presidents get to change not only the course of history and of human life, but if today was any example, the course of rivers, too. President Johnson of the United States and Díaz Ordaz of Mexico touched off an explosion that forced the Rio Grande to a new channel and changed the boundaries in El Paso between the United States and Mexico. The ceremonies were pleasant, the greetings cordial, and the speeches warm. Said Lyndon Johnson, "We've shown that borders between nations are not just lines across which men shake their fists in anger." There was more trouble at San Francisco State College today. The acting president, Dr. Hayakawa, closed the school for the Christmas holidays a week early. In the General Assembly of the United Nations, the African countries in a bloc angrily and emphatically voted to suspend South Africa from the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. The United States and Canada claimed that exclusion is illegal and could set dangerous precedents. In Czechoslovakia, the Communist Party Central Committee's list of economic and governmental changes is due to be published within a few hours. Workers and student groups reportedly concerned that liberals in the Dubček regime will be forced out. There were broad hints of a general strike if the changes are too harsh. In Britain, there was dismal reading for Harold Wilson's Labour Party. A Gallup poll taken for the Daily Telegraph showed that if a general election were held now, the Conservatives would badly thrash Wilson's labour rights. The new low in popularity came after the recent austerity measures taken to save the pound again. In Brazil, the military government is about to come unstuck. That's because a congressman charged in Congress that the armed forces is a nest of torturers. The government tried to arrest that man, but Congress was defiant and upheld his immunity. The army called out the militia. Security people scrutinized newspaper editorials and stories. Most newspapers for today were seized. A newspaper editorial that dared tell President Costa e Silva that he can't run the country of 80 million like an army division was squelched. Costa e Silva took emergency powers tonight. From our newsroom in New York, that's the news. I'm Meld Haynes. Let's continue with Newsfront.
Now Newsfront covers politics and the political shape of the new government now being formed by President-elect Richard Nixon. At the outset, before actually taking power, the potential qualities of all of the new presidential appointees, especially the cabinet, are undergoing searching analysis. And this analysis extends beyond their known views to their personal background. But one group of Americans, perhaps more than any other, looks with deep concern on the men now moving to high posts in the Capitol. This group, the 10% of Americans who are black, are represented tonight by two whose views cover a broad spectrum of black opinion. They are attorney Florence R. Kennedy, a graduate of Columbia University Law School, director of the Media Workshop, and a practicing lawyer whose clients have included H. Rapp Brown and Dick Gregory. and Dr. John A. Morcell, Assistant Executive Director of the NAACP, a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of City College of New York and holder of a doctoral degree from Columbia University. Dr. Morcell is a specialist in social research and is director of the Institute for Community Relations. We hope to be joined later in the program by Roy Innes, the National Director of CORE, who has not arrived as yet. Ms. Kennedy, what is your initial reaction to the all-white cabinet of Mr. Nixon?
Well,
is this a significant thing?
Oh, I regard it as a declaration of war, yes. In other words, I think that inasmuch as black people have indicated that they no longer intend to accept oppression, that the declaration and announcement of such a cabinet is clearly an insult, an outrage, and a declaration of war. I think it frees black people from any kind of further obligation to concern itself with the views of this administration whatsoever. And I think in a sense it can always be made to be a good thing, but I think it's really outrageous. And I'm amazed, I really shouldn't be, but I am amazed that the media are taking it with such equanimity.
Well, now, Mr. Nixon did offer a cabinet post, it was reported, to Senator Brooke of Massachusetts, a Negro, and he turned it down, saying that he was satisfied that the color of a man's skin was not a significant factor, that if efforts were made to help the black Americans, that this was all he was concerned with.
Well, that's all very well, but when black people go into office, it's always made very clear that they represent everyone. So I think we have a right to assume that white people are representing their interests. When no one in the cabinet has an income of less than $25,000 a year, and incidentally, I get very cynical about people who give up $400,000 annual incomes to take a job at $35,000. It makes me know very well that their class interest is what makes it all worthwhile. So I think black people, women, Jews, are all off the hook. I don't think they need to worry at all. Young people can forget it. In other words, as far as I'm concerned, war is declared. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean fighting war, because obviously most dissident people are not armed, but it certainly means that war has been declared. Tricky Dick has shown us that he does not care about our class of problems, you see.
And Mr. Morcell, do you agree with Ms. Kennedy?
No, I don't think I could say that I agree in all respects. I cannot say that, speaking for myself, and I assume for most of my associates, the cabinet is one that on its face seems to hold great promise for movement along the lines that Negroes and poor whites are concerned about. There is no one in the cabinet group, to my knowledge, who has in the past demonstrated any very special or unusual or extraordinary concern for the problems of Negroes or for the problems of the poor. And this is not, of course, a guarantee that none of them will show such interest. I don't regard it as a declaration of war. I think that it is an extremely cautious set of choices made by a man who, whatever his range of motives may be, and I'm not prepared to judge those at this point either, a man who wants to move in an atmosphere of what he regards as moderation without any advance commitment in any particular direction. On the other hand, I think that the very fact that you choose this kind of cabinet, which some commentators have described as bland, and I would not dissent from that characterization, it suggests that you may have a farther distance to go than some others might if you're going to be shoved in the right direction. Now, let me add one other thing. Everything that needs to be done or that can be done by our organization and those affiliated with us, particularly in the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, will be done to push along as vigorously as possible. We worked with the Eisenhower administration. We achieved some things with the Eisenhower administration. And we will work with the Nixon administration as long as it seems likely to pay off. I expect it will, because If any of us should have learned anything from the last few years in this country, and particularly from this current year, 1968, it is that it is quite unsafe to make hard and fast predictions about anything, particularly in politics.
The black vote was not a Nixon vote by any means. In fact, the estimates were that less than 10% of the black vote voted for Nixon.
So what? He's the president of everyone in this country. And as far as Brooke is concerned, he's as near nothing as anything can be, and I certainly wouldn't feel any better if he were in the cabinet, except it would be slightly better PR. Now, this idea that you can move black people around like checkers, out of all the millions of black people, you mean you can't find a black person without taking one out of the Senate?
Well, let me ask you, Ms. Kennedy, any of your friends, any of your black friends, would they be willing to accept a position in the Nixon cabinet?
Oh, I mean, this is so absurd. I mean, would they be prepared to take one of the positions that's been vacated by one of these establishmentarians he's picked out? Of course they would. In a prostitute society, everybody's looking for a decent corner, you know. I mean, after all, Roy Innes isn't here, and I'm sure it's because he's in such large demand, because wearing this black mask as he does, and his nice beard and his Afro hairdo, and talking like a blue-eyed, blonde, instant capitalist, he'll be in great demand, and I dare say that's why he hasn't shown up yet. I'm sure that there just aren't enough TV stations to find space for him all of a sudden, you see, because his tray is full. He's now a co-publisher with Bill Haddad of Manhattan Tribune, so he's an instant capitalist, you see. So, of course, what he says can show us what we can expect as the establishment buys off the so-called militants.
Do you want to defend Mr. Innes,
Mr. Morsell?
The
fact that they're for sale is quite quite consistent with a prostitute society such as we live in.
No, I don't think that Roy particularly needs a defense, or if he does, he'll take care of his defense. I'm about to associate myself with Ms. Kennedy in a way to deflect, for the balance of this program, any barbs at the NAACP, and I'm going to say that it's just as bad for Nixon not to have a woman in his cabinet as it is for him not to have a Negro in his cabinet.
It's really worse because women represent 51% of the population, in a sense. The difference is that the black people have recognized their oppression where many women have not. So the failure to include a black person is much more insulting, because there have been crises. The black people have withdrawn consent to oppression. They have indicated that they are not all interested in a good corner in terms of black capitalism. Now, black capitalism, I might say, will be very successful. And I dare say that Tricky Dick will be the favorite lollipop for many ex-militants. And this is as it should be, because if a person is eaten, obviously they're not hungry. But you see, the fact that Eddie Brooke is not accepting a cabinet position does not put Tricky Dick off the hook for my money, and I'm sure that many black people will agree with me. Because this is just the same idea, all black people look alike, and if you ask one and he doesn't want to come, that settles for everybody. Of course, the NAACP, as far as I'm concerned, represent the good black people. They're not even black, in my opinion. I call them the good square Negroes. And I think that the NAACP will get very large bounty from this administration. Because if there's one thing that Republicans understand, it's what money can do.
Now, Ms. Kennedy, every time a black person makes it, do you write them off as no longer interested?
I don't think you can write them off, but I think that the conflict of interest is what this whole thing is about. And I think when a person's interest, the NAACP's interest, is in maintaining its structure, and it maintains its structure by not rocking the boat, in my opinion. I have not heard of the NAACP or Roy rocking the boat recently. And I'm confident that there's some relationship between their not rocking the boat and the fact that the dollars that the members give them are not nearly so important as the $250,000 grants and awards that they get, you know, to play around and do these little things they do.
Let me just say a word about that, because this is a charge, incidentally, which Roy Innes made the other day in his column. It is a widely held myth about the NAACP. The fact of the matter is that the bulk of our money comes and always has come from our members. As a matter of fact, it was not until 4 years ago that we were able, under the Treasury regulations, even to receive large gifts and foundation grants. We got special permission to do it for some parts of our work just 4 years ago. But beyond that, we have always received the bulk of our money, 90 to 95% of it, from the dues payments and the money raised by our members in our branches, and 90 to 95% of them are black.
Well, then you really have no excuse. I was hoping there was an excuse. In the circumstances, you're just being good, and I can't quite say why. I just don't understand. We picketed Roy Wilkins' house last summer, my sisters and I, because he became an apologist in his column in the Post for the Chicago Police Department. And we just couldn't understand it. Well, I assumed it was because they were getting large grants.
Well,
I don't understand it at all. This is the kind of assumption. It's just gratuitous.
That a childish, cheap cynicism brings a great many people to. And I understand how they arrive at that state of mind. I cannot yield to this kind of cynicism. It may be that I'm wrong. It may very well be that the road on which the NAACP is poised, and which it has followed for some 60 years, will not lead us where we expect it to lead. No one can be assured of it. But I'm equally certain that there is no other path, no other set of alternatives that anyone has yet come up with that holds as much promise, small as that is. Now, everybody makes mistakes. No one knows more about the mistakes than we who are in the association. But that any of our decisions represent a betrayal of faith in that we are kowtowing to anybody who is a source of income or influence, who pressures us, this, of course, I can and will deny.
Well, I'd like to get back to the cabinet.
This gets back to the cabinet.
This is directly related to the cabinet.
Because I think the best thing you could do to advance black people would be to make an analysis of this cabinet and explain to people who these people are and what their role has been in society.
Well, now you have Robert Finch in for Robert Weaver at the Health Education and at the Housing Department. Rather, George Romney is in for Weaver, and we have Finch in for Wilbur Cohen.
But you see, you think of the class they represent. You think of the fact that you have two bankers, and what has the banking community ever done for black people, for women, for youth? You see, it's not just a question of black people. It's a question of those people who are prepared to make a coalition dedicated to change. And this cabinet is the same old same, you know. And it is an outrage. It's as if you had a child who was allergic to a certain set of foods, and you took him to the doctor, and the child was sick all over the rug 1,000 times, and the doctor said, this menu is bad for this child, this is causing the allergy, and you got a new cook, and the cook brought out a menu with all the things the child is allergic to. Now, you've got bankers, you've got school administrators, and everybody knows that the education system in this country has been programming people for oppression for the last 5, 10, 15 decades, you see. And you've got nobody making under $25,000 a year, not counting the booty and the Lulus and the travel expenses. And you've got heads of corporations. You've got the most racist element in this country represented without apology, and everybody's pussyfooting around making excuses, and I just don't understand it. It is absolutely an insult. How long do you have to wait to know that this is the same old same? Yeah. And there's a crisis in this country. I really don't care. I don't have any property
that's going to get burned up.
You may be
absolutely correct, but if you are, it will not be for the reasons that you state, because you simply cannot categorize people.
I just did.
You can't do it accurately and properly, nor can you expect that the predictions based on it will come true on that basis.
Well, I can tell you that a president...
Just a minute, let me finish. You can't lump bankers as a group.
You can't lump businessmen
as a group.
Oh, please.
And assume by virtue of their position in the society, in the structure, that they will behave in certain prescribed ways, predictable ways.
Oh,
it
really?
Cannot be done.
Well, it, my dear, it's being done in the media all the time. Every single time something happens in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, they talk about racism. You've got all kinds of black people out there. Every time something happens in IS 201, every time something happens in the poverty program, but there's such charity. There is such charity for these. They're not bland. These are racist people.
Well, what about Daniel?
Go to their banks and find out how many black people are on the boards of directors of their companies. You can find out what a man is. What is this business of giving them a chance? What chance do they need? Look at their history the way you do with anything else to find out what it's about.
Ms. Kennedy, what about Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who is the coordinator of these urban affairs at the White House, special assistant to the president?
He made a hustle about talking about black people's families, so what else is new? I mean, making a hustle of studying black people is certainly nothing to recommend him, to me at least.
But certainly the liberal establishment has always been a part of his makeup, and he's always been concerned.
Well, what have liberals got to do with it? I'm talking about people that represent some force for change. I'm not talking about liberals.
You know,
who needs a bunch of crabgrass liberals?
You do the same thing almost.
And you've only got one, and he's not
in
the cabinet.
When you refer to the liberal establishment, does this? You know, our thinking in this country has gotten so corrupted in this routine, rigid, automated fashion of designating everything by a category which presumably stands for meaning and for significance. The important thing to do is to find out what makes Moynihan tick, what are his ideas, to read what he says. He has written some very important and I think significant things. He has a bright and inquiring mind. He's made some mistakes too, but everybody does, including Miss Kennedy.
Oh, I make
including
millions.
Everybody.
I'm not
you will
in
not
a position
find anybody
of power.
In the
what
cabinet.
Does it matter what
people
I do?
Who are in power make mistakes just the same as people who are not in power. And you don't have any gilded formula that's going to give you perfect people in any of these positions.
Perfect people.
We're going
He's
to work with
perfection.
Them. We're going to work with them.
I'm sure you
and
will.
And we are going to work hard on them at every point.
You started
because
already.
Because the key to action in this administration is clearly going to be enforcement. Even under Johnson, with all the pressure he put out to get it done, and under Kennedy before him, the Congress simply did not respond to the need for adequate money to enforce the laws that had passed. If we cannot get enforcement, if we can't get a clear understanding, not just at the cabinet level, but down through the sub-cabinet and down through all the other echelons in the federal establishment, then we're not going to move anything, no matter how good the promises are.
The cabinet doesn't enforce anything anyway.
The cabinet can do a great deal and has done a great deal.
Now you have your Attorney General, Mr. Mitchell, Kennedy and Mr. Morsell. Mr. Mitchell is the campaign manager, and he will be the man in charge of enforcement for much of the legislation. What
well,
is your reaction
let's say my fingers are crossed on Mr. Mitchell. He comes out of a Wall Street background. He's a Wall Street lawyer. He has not had to engage in the give and take even of organization politics, which tends to do something in the way of broadening a man's concerns. On the other hand, one might be surprised by Mr. Mitchell.
Boy,
I would hope to be surprised. I am frequently surprised
some
in public
when?
Life.
When? Tell me when you were last surprised by anything an American cabinet minister ever did.
In a recent article
in
a recent article in the New Republic, the writer John Osborne was talking of the effort behind the scenes that Mr. Nixon made to get a percentage of the black vote. And he said that the purpose of the hidden Nixon campaign was less to win votes than to identify him with black Americans as a prospective president who really had their interests at heart and once in office could be trusted to govern the country fairly and effectively. Ms. Kennedy, you're saying that he's done nothing to prove this as yet.
Absolutely not, but I'm sure there'll be plenty of lickers and suckers and the Tricky Dick will be a lollipop to many, many people, but I'm not one of those. I voted for Dick Gregory and he is my favorite.
Well, now, but Ms. Kennedy, you've made your views very clear, crystal clear. Where do you go now, and where do people who feel like you go? You have
into
a government?
Into the streets, where we've always gone. Into the streets and into anything that will move this country and make for change. The fastest thing that's moving is what I'll be on, and wherever it's going, that's where I'll be found. And I promise you I will not be sitting around waiting until these bankers surprise me, boy. They'll surprise me by leading me to a Connie camp if I'm not careful.
Mr. Morsell, what is your concluding view on what strategy would be to follow?
Largely to repeat what I said at the outset, the NAACP is a large organization, an influential organization. It has a number of reservoirs of activity and action which it will draw upon, consultation, negotiation, pressure in the streets too, and we have our own glorious history there as well.
Ancient
whatever
history.
Whatever is necessary to be done and that we can do, we will do, to keep this administration from regressing and hopefully to push it ahead in the way we'd like it to go.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Florence Kennedy and Mr. John A. Morsell, the NAACP, for being with us. We regret that business on the outside undoubtedly must have kept Roy Innes from joining us. Our subject this evening, the black reaction to the new government cabinet. NewsFront is brought to you through the facilities of the Eastern Educational Network.